The Albany Symphony will welcome American pianist Orion Weiss, who makes his third performance with, who marks his third performance with the orchestra as the centerpiece of their American Music Festival Orchestra Concert on Saturday night at 7:30.
Weiss joins the orchestra for Christopher Rouse's Seeing, an extraordinary piano concerto commissioned by the New York Philharmonic for Emmanuel Ax in 1999. Seeing is a powerful, poignant statement on the nature of mental illness.
One of the most sought-after pianists of his generation, Orion Weiss, has performed with many of the major orchestras of this country, including the Chicago Symphony, Boston Symphony, Los Angeles Philharmonic, and New York Philharmonic, and it is a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us and making the trek up the thruway to be here.
It's great to be here, and I had your show to sort of lead me up the road.
Well, and you showed up. Which yeah. We're very happy. That's good. There's many aspects of the story that I find fascinating, but let us begin with the obvious, which David alluded to earlier in the program. So Emmanuel Ax is supposed to be doing this, then he has a pinched nerve, he can't do it, and then you get tapped, you get the call. And David Allen Miller, the maestro of the Albany Symphony Orchestra, this is last month. And he says, oh my God, he said, this thing is really, really hard, this piece.
Yeah. Well, actually, to me on the phone, he said, I don't think it's so bad. So Mr. Ax was like, no, it's pretty hard. But David was like, nah, don't worry, you'll be fine. You'll learn it in two minutes.
Well, sure, he needs somebody.
Of course.
You know, he's got to sign you up. So, it's hard, right?
It's pretty. Yeah, it's just dense and intense and very ambitious piano writing and it's filled with it's so colorful. It's hard. Yeah, it's gonna be. I'm so looking forward to the first rehearsal tonight. It's gonna be. I mean, it feels like an athletic event actually because it's a long piece and it's pretty hard the whole way through and. Yeah. So it's like a, I don't know, it's almost like bodybuilding some of these giant chords where you're playing six notes in each hand. I wonder how you can do that with five fingers, but you know, one of the fingers has to sort of miss and hit two keys at once. So,
do you have a page turner?
You know, the way the part is sort of is printed.
Yes.
I get to turn pages in the 2 seconds I have a break, and so I can turn my own pages. I think.
Wow. How did you meet your wife?
Oh, my wife also. She's also a pianist, it was very easy. You know, just basically, that's all you only people you do meet as a pianist is other pianists and other musicians. We met in the elevator at Juilliard.
And how did so then what happened?
Well, then we woke up.
The elevator got stuck.
Well, we used to go. Yeah, I wish no. With the story was that we used to go to Mr. Lowenthal. Jerome Lowenthal had these big studio classes where he would. Buy a lot of Chinese food to try to entice students to actually come and play, and so he did. And I wasn't one of his students, but I loved him. I played for him all the time, and I went. And then I ate Chinese food with my wife, and then you know, well, she wasn't my wife then. But
what happened in the elevator?
I think it was just sort of like shaking hands. You know, yeah. Oh, you play the piano? Oh, I do too. And and then we were in a couple festivals together. This was 7 years ago,
and she's a professor at Vassar, right?
Yes, among many other things, and we play two piano together all the time, and we have a 4-month-old who's playing the piano with her legs right now. So
did she look at the piece that you have to play and say, "Oh my God, you're going to die"?
Well, she looked at it and she's gets to hear me practice everything that I practice. So she told me she really enjoyed the passages, particularly the ones that are marked triple fortissimo. So those, you know, the house gets smaller the more I practice.
Did she ever say, "Well, I'm so glad I don't have to do this"?
Well, you know. We when we're learning two piano stuff, we definitely trade parts. You say, "Well, I'm too busy this month. Can you learn this?" And
yeah.
And you know, this would have been a great piece to play together because some of the parts are so difficult. You could use another pianist at the same piano.
Another couple of hands.
Yeah.
But anyway, you look at it, you're sort of all in it together.
That's you know, and she everything I play since the kitchen is right next to where I practice, she comes by and says, you know. Isn't that supposed to be a crescendo there, or is that you know? I think
there you go.
Yeah, maybe the tempo is a little fast if she knows the piece. Yeah, well, and here she was noticing all the allusions to Schumann, so she kept saying, "Oh, this is Schumann." Yeah.
Well, allusions to Schumann because it's about mental illness. Is that the issue?
Yes, and the whole piece is filled. I mean, sometimes very overt quotes from the Schumann Piano Concerto, and sometimes completely hidden things that, as a pianist, I'm just discovering. Oh, wow, this chord is you'd never be able to hear it, but it's made up of two chords at once from the Schumann Concerto.
So the piece was written specifically for Maniacs.
Yes.
So, and you're one of his students, a protege. And so at what point do you become you, or do you want to replicate him in some way? I mean, it seems like a bit of a balance.
Good question.
Yeah. Well, as a teacher, he was a very just a gentle guiding hand. He never said you have to do it this way or this is how it has to be. He said he would always sort of take what I was trying to do and try to help me make it more coherent, more convincing. And so, it feels like a great honor to be the only other pianist besides Emmanuel Lacks to have played this piece. I haven't played it yet, but to have
Where did you do the learning? Where did he teach you?
At Juilliard.
Ah.
But I would go to his house. So I would walk up from Juilliard to his. And he was playing concerts all the time, and I would play for him on Tuesday, and he'd leave Wednesday for the concert and come back Sunday or Monday, and then I'd get a lesson on Tuesday again.
So how much is this is an impossible question to answer? I know it is, but how much is listening on his part? How much of it is listening? How much of it is watching? How much of it is immersion for you?
Well, with this piece, for example, I actually. The publisher forwarded me a recording of him playing it, which is an advantage that, I mean, it's amazing to have a new piece of music it's the live performance that he did. So I was joking with him. I said, what recording did you listen to when you were learning it? Because
he didn't
get one. But, you know, I've every time I'm around him, I feel like I learn something, I grow, and he's a role model in so many ways. In not just his musicianship and in the way he plays the piano, but also, you know, just the joy that he has in life, despite how hard, you know, he works. I mean, because I think of how, I mean, it's all connected. He's an amazing guy.
I've always wanted to know one other thing, and that is about pianists. Does the piano that they give you to work on when you get here and you say, uh-oh, or do they make a difference?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you get to the place and the piano is just what you hoped it would be for the piece you're playing. I mean, for a recital, sometimes it might be right for one of the pieces. It's always changing. And then there are pianos that you meet right away and you have you fall in love with them. And then sometimes with those pianos, the love diminishes after time. And after your first concert, you're like, geez, that didn't really get along as well as I'd hoped. And others you hate at the beginning and then you start to learn how to play them. It changes.
At the risk of sounding like I'm leading the witness, let me just ask this question, which is, when you talked about the conversation that you have with David Allen Miller, and he's saying, oh, you know, you're fine, it's easy, and so forth, and he's talking you into it. This is the third time, as I mentioned in the introduction, it's the third time that you've done this. It seems to me that then there becomes a layer of trust that you have in him as music director and as a conductor that taking on this, that you will be in good hands, that perhaps you would not have done had you not had that relationship previously.
Well, that's definitely true. I mean, I knew that even if it was, I couldn't trust him to say that it was. I knew he was going to say that it wasn't as hard as
right.
Especially because I knew it was written for Emmanuel Lacks, and he once told me when he was playing it 10 years ago how hard it was. So I knew it was going to be a lot of work. But I also knew that whatever the project what was going to be, it would be really fun to work with David and with the Albany Symphony because it is a comfortable working relationship and it's exciting and this is an exciting festival. So I was like, of course, I had to jump right in.
This is your third time, as I mentioned, but the first time as a part of the festival, first time in this venue.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And the other work that you have done has been with more traditional repertoire?
Sort of getting less and less traditional. We started with a Mozart piano concerto, maybe the most famous Mozart piano concerto, Elvira Madigan, and K-467. And then from that, we did a couple years ago, we did the Stravinsky concerto for piano and winds, which is like already a lot less frequently unheard, no, less frequently heard, and so now this, a piece that only two pianists have played, so getting closer to doing a world premiere, hopefully.
and that's what you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, the musical world is so huge, and I feel like I'm exploring my own things, and then taking on projects that are suggested to me or offered to me, and it's so interesting. I'm I love doing new stuff, and I love doing the like you said, the dead composers. That's wonderful too. So I'm just I still feel like I'm open to anything.
Do you think of, I mean, is there a composer in you in the sense of this is something that I would like to play and this is something that I could
you
I
mean
could
like
do?
If write my own music? Mm. Well, you know, when I was young, when I was about 9, playing the piano and I was composing pieces, I was writing down. I wrote a piece called "The Butterfly and the Rainbow and the Storm." I was writing pieces, and my mom said, "You know what? You're going to be a great composer. I'll take you to take theory lessons." So I had a theory lesson, and I actually haven't composed since then. I wrote a couple cadenzas for Mozart concertos, but I feel like I leave composing to the composers.
Where'd you go to high school?
In Cleveland. Cleveland. And there was a wonderful program at the Cleveland Institute of Music called the Young Artist Program. So I would leave high school at about noon and go
release
down.
Release time.
Yeah. That was a good thing. I didn't have to do gym.
Hey man, I can subscribe to that.
Yeah. Me too. That's a good gig. You got a good agent. Yeah, so, exactly. At what point in your life did you say, okay, this is not something, this is more than an activity. This is going to be my life.
You know, it was a very blurred line. I think maybe the moment that I realized this was going to be my life was when my parents told me I would have to start paying my rent myself, which was right after I was when I was in Juilliard, because I was earning money as a musician, but I thought that was my money and their money was for the rent. but then I sort of everything became blurred, and before I knew it, yeah, it just was. I knew I wanted to play the piano and I liked the after school activity type thing, and it made me different. And then all of a sudden it was a career, and I don't mind. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, and like, what were you paying for rent? I mean, was it minor?
Steep. No, I mean it was the Ansonia building in New York, which is where I know. But, I mean, it was like a subdivision of one of the apartments.
Yeah,
and I don't know, 1750 or something.
Oh, dear God!
But this was in 2003, so it was like.
Oh, okay. So this was real.
It was real. There was a lot. It was a lot of money. I sold my blood and stuff like that.
Okay, so then, literally figuratively,
exactly. just in the sense that I practiced to play the concerts and earn money. Yeah,
and that's a little, that's kind of a throwing you out of the nest and letting you fly moment.
That's I think that might be. I mean, it's as sort of trivial as it seems, or it's like not a very poetic moment, but it was when I realized that this was my career. This is when this is how I'm paying bills.
And we're out of time, but you're not bitter toward them.
Not at all. Oh, no, good. I love my parents. All yeah, right. Yeah, they did the right thing.
Orion Weiss joins the orchestra for Christopher Rouse's Seeing at the Festival Orchestra Concert on Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. here at MPEC. You can find out more by going to albanysymphony.com for more information. Orion, it's been a delight to have you here. Nothing but the best of luck to you, and thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Real pleasure. Thank you. You're listening to the Roundtables live broadcast from MPEC on WAMC.